8:37, State Senator Steve Ogden joins us this morning to kind of talk, because it's about time to go to Austin for a while. How are you doing this morning?
Scott, I'm fine and happy to be in town.
Good. And I know you spent a little time out of town, and folks need to understand that there's a lot of stuff that goes on before the session starts, obviously. What have you been doing, say, the last 3 weeks, month?
Well, over the last 3 weeks and month, we've been working pretty hard on the budget. And that budget will be introduced over in the House within the first 4 or 5 days of the session, so sometime next week or the week after that. And what we have to introduce is what's called a base bill that's drafted by the Legislative Budget Board, of which I'm a member. And we've been working for the last 3 months trying to get that ready for introduction. It's going to be pretty sobering when it's introduced. It will balance, but it is not going to be anything that people are going to want to embrace immediately, and it's a starting point as we begin the 141-day session.
I think it's fair to say that you've made it pretty clear that the rainy day fund is going to have to be used. Yeah. Is it going to have to be used up? First, I guess, how much is in there? Is it going to have to be used up?
Well, the rainy day fund is growing. I mean, that's some good news. I asked the comptroller the other day when I was in Austin 2 days ago to participate in her new swearing-in, and she told me the rainy day fund was going to be over $9.2 billion by September of 2011. The reason it's growing is because oil and gas prices, or particularly oil prices, are substantially higher than what we predicted. So it's going to be at least $9 billion, and that's something different than what we've had in past downturns. We've never had a rainy day fund that large, and we're probably going to have to use most of it before the session's over.
State Senator Steve Ogden joining us this morning. Okay, so the magic number, what is this deficit going to be before the rainy day fund is applied to it?
Well, my magic number, which, as long as everybody's throwing out a number,
sure, may as well,
is $3 billion. And the way I define that is that we are running a current biennial deficit. We're in the 2009 and 10 biennium, or 2010 and 11, the way the fiscal years work. And the current biennial budget that we wrote 2 years ago, state revenues are going to fall short of what was predicted 2 years ago by as much as $4 billion. The comptroller will announce that next week, or maybe even today. That is a true deficit. Now, we've already anticipated that reduction in state revenue by telling state agencies to cut back on spending. There was a 10% cutback, and then there was another letter that went out that said do another 5% cutback. That's going to result in a reduction in spending in the current biennium of about almost $2 billion. The difference between the $4 billion shortfall in the current biennium and the $2 billion in spending cuts is going to have to be made up either with additional spending cuts or probably with a rainy day fund. Now, that is the only true deficit. Going forward, what we're talking about when we talk about a deficit is what we would like to spend versus what we have to spend. So that's more of a wish list than a deficit.
But because those are the big numbers we're hearing. Yeah. Some as high as $24 billion.
That's a wish list number.
Okay. So that means, like anything else, like we have to do as individuals, we're going to have to scratch things off the wish list.
That's right.
Talk a little bit about the climate of Austin as we go in this year. You've been here a while, but you know there are a lot of new faces, mm-hmm. especially on the House side.
Well, I mean, the climate in Austin is has changed. I'm not exactly sure how, because all of these new members haven't shown up yet, and I haven't seen how they were going to react. There was not a lot of change in the Texas Senate. There's only two new members. But the election, which was basically a national referendum on President Obama and liberal Democratic leadership in the Congress, has spilled over into Texas politics, and you can expect a much more conservative and much and a more frugal legislature than we've had in the past. And I've always thought we were pretty conservative and pretty frugal, but we're going to be more conservative and more frugal.
But they're naive to some level?
Well, I wouldn't say naive. I mean, they're inexperienced.
Okay.
And so what's going to happen, and I think it's going to take several months until we reconcile reality with rhetoric. These new members who are inexperienced have been elected based on ideology and rhetoric and political promises. The reality is going to be something different. It always is. And I think it's probably going to take us 4 or 5 months before we reconcile the differences between a lot of the rhetoric that was used in the last election and the reality of what the state faces. I think we can do that, but it might mean that we'll be down there in the summer.
I was going to say that that's you don't have that much time to begin with, even walk in the door. So now let's talk about, you mentioned you're a member of the Legislative Budget Board. We saw a story earlier this week that the Legislative Budget Board has suggested that possibly tax abatements or state rates be set on the state level. I can't imagine there's a development director of any city around here who likes that idea.
Well, I think what typically happens when you're talking to cities is that they'll all come and they'll say the same thing. We hate having to do these tax abatements because it's unfair to the people that are already paying the taxes. But we don't have any choice because everybody else is doing that. I personally think we don't need tax abatements, period. I mean, whether the state or the county or the city or the school districts are providing abatements, it distorts the tax system, and it's basically unfair to the people that have always been paying the taxes to basically grant special benefits to the new guy who just has shown up. And so I believe that whether it's on a state level or a local level, the best thing to do is to substantially cut back on tax abatements or else eliminate them, because this is the principle. Taxes should be equal and uniform and as low as possible. And these tax abatements distort that principle to the tune of tens of millions of dollars, and now we're beginning to approach billion-dollar type tax abatements across the state of Texas. And it's one of the reasons our tax system is as rickety as it is.
Okay, so let's now come down to the focus, the two questions that people here want to know who work for Texas A&M or the state of Texas. Do I get a raise this year?
No.
Okay.
I would be surprised, although we are not going to take away the ability of school districts or Texas A&M University to award merit raises or pay people competitive salaries. We're not going to take that ability away, but the fiscal reality is that if funding is being reduced, and it will be reduced at Texas A&M, and if it's reduced at our school districts, it's going to become a monetary impossibility to be out there throwing out raises. I think one of the things that I would hope to see is that we would focus on more on eliminating layoffs than we would on giving pay raises.
Assuming that Texas A&M has followed the guidelines that the state has put forth, in your view, will we see any more cuts as far as the budget is concerned at A&M?
Well, I don't know. We're going to have to work through the session on that. I know base bill is going to introduce a significant reduction in state funding for all of higher ed. Now, over the next 141 days, we will have a number of opportunities to go back and look at that, discuss the role of student financial aid, the role of tuition, whether there's any rainy day money that should be used to raise funding for higher ed. So we're just going to have to wait and see. What I've told university administrators is that plan – expect the worst and hope for the best. I think the maximum that funding that could be cut from our universities compared to the current biennium is maybe 15%. I think when it's all over, the cut will be substantially less than that, but that's probably about where we're going to start.
How much, in your view, how much should the state be involved in? Any number of ideas have been floated. Changing the system where we have tenure, changing the idea where the sabbaticals are paid. Should the state of Texas be doing this, or is this a campus-by-campus or system-by-system thing, from your view?
I think the legislature cannot, in a right now, change the system of tenure. I'm not even sure that system can be changed on a campus level. It's very deeply ingrained in the concept of the university and academia, and it's probably not an area that I think would be that productive. I do think these issues of accountability and how much are you being asked to teach in return for the state salary that you're receiving are legitimate, but those should best be determined at the Board of Regents level, I think. My job in the Texas legislature is to do my best to fund the universities at a level that is necessary for them to do a good job.
State Senator Steve Ogden joining us this morning. Chris Christie, the governor of New Jersey, has pretty much been the poster child for this, but he points to a problem in New Jersey that's happening coast to coast, and that is a pension fund that just cannot support the number of pensioners out there now or in the future. Kind of give us a view of where Texas pensions.
Well, our pension funds relative to the rest of the country are in excellent shape. That doesn't mean that they don't have their problems, but right now, on a state level, teacher retirement system and employee retirement system pension funds are in good enough shape that that's not a problem we have to worry about right now.
There are more children in a CHIPS program in Texas than any other state in America. Mm-hmm. Is it there or is it someplace else? And if so, where will the federal government have to come in and help Texas fund?
Well, what I've told other people, CHIP and Medicaid are tied together at the hip because they both do basically the same thing, provide health insurance for either poor kids or children whose families have limited economic means. And this entire session and what happens with all these other issues, whether you're talking about higher ed or public ed or criminal justice, is going to be predicated on how much money we must appropriate to keep Medicaid afloat and to keep CHIP afloat. And it's a big number. Last session, one of the things that made writing the budget relatively easy was federal stimulus money. And it was an issue in the last election, but I've always admitted that federal stimulus money made a big difference in our ability to write a pretty generous budget last session. And inside that stimulus money was one number, and that is that traditionally in Medicaid, we appropriate statewide for the last 2 years, we appropriated $44 billion for Medicaid. The federal-state match has been traditionally 60% federal, 40% state. Last session, as part of the stimulus, the match went from 70% federal and 30% state. Well, 10% of $44 billion is $4.4 billion. So that's an infusion that we were not expecting last session that we got, and we used that money to basically write a pretty generous budget. We are expecting that money is not going to be available now. So that $4.4 billion has got to be replaced with $4.4 billion from somewhere else. The most likely place is a rainy day fund. That's an $8.8 billion swing. That's like an intercepted pass on the goal line going back for 100 yards. That's not a 7-point play. That's a 14-point play. So what happens inside that number? How much of the rainy day fund that we have got to use to shore up Medicaid and to a certain extent CHIP will determine everything else that happens in the budget. And it just remains to be seen. I think we're probably not going to know the answer to that till late in the session, because obviously with the Congress, they've got a lot to say about how much money they give the states for Medicaid, or whether they relax the regulations so we have more flexibility on how to spend it. But I don't think that's going to get resolved until late in the spring.
Next week, of course, is when things get started. There'll be the inauguration and then the swearing-in of members, and you will be Master of Ceremonies of the inaugural celebration, and that'll be a busy day for you as you continue to take on new responsibilities.
Well, I'm looking forward to that. I've always enjoyed the inauguration of a governor. 4 years ago, it was snowed and iced out. I was kind of disappointed in that. So I hope we get pretty good weather, and I hope we have a chance to get out and celebrate our democracy and celebrate the beginning of a new session in the legislature and a new four-year term for Governor Perry. So I look forward to participating in that celebration.
And my understanding is that you will probably be the president pro tem.
Well, assuming I don't lose the vote, but the way I've been over there long enough now that I'm now senior enough to be president pro tempore, which is almost always a honorific title, except when the governor and the lieutenant governor are gone. And if the lieutenant governor is gone, you assume the role of lieutenant governor. And if the governor and the lieutenant governor are gone, you assume the role of governor. So there is some potential for having some real responsibility.
Okay, you got a list of stuff now? If those two guys leave town, you got a list of stuff?
Well, the one thing I was thinking about is you know, traditionally, there is a celebration called Governor for the Day Celebration.
Yeah.
And some of those have been quite extravagant. I've seen plates commissioned. I've seen inaugural balls. I've seen parades. Based on the current budgetary situation in Texas and what I'm going to have to do over as chairman of finance, we probably skip the celebration.
I was hoping to get an invite over there for a big soiree or something
like that. I'm not
sure
anybody would show up.
Yeah. On a serious note, though, I know that your plan is to basically give a state of the state.
Yeah.
If you would, kind of give us an overview of what they can expect to hear.
What I hope to do is to use that platform to talk a little bit about, okay, here's where I think our state is, and this is what I think we ought to work on during our legislative session, and one of them is the budget. And I know that Texans, pretty realistic bunch out there, and they understand the reality of the fact that we're going to have to reduce spending. The key is not whether we reduce spending or not, but whether we do it in a way that they think is fair. And so what we've got to do next session is to work as hard as we can with our colleagues, Republicans and Democrats alike, to develop a consensus over this issue. This is all the money we have. This is the fairest way to allocate it. And it's easier said than done, but if we do that, I think we'll be fine. Other areas that we need to address, obviously, and I will bring them up in the speech, and also we'll talk about those in the future, is public school finance overhaul, the issues affecting border security and my concerns about that, and the issue that we talked about earlier about taxes. Tax abatements is just one small component of a tax system that is increasingly unpredictable, and lots of people don't think is fair. We don't have to raise taxes, but we certainly ought to look at fixing the tax system we have now, because there's just too many special interest carve-outs in it for any objective person to say it's a good system that can meet the needs of the state of Texas.
Yeah, and y'all have swung and missed a couple of times, right? I mean, it just hadn't gotten the projections that you wanted.
That's well, one of them that you're talking about is the state's business tax,
right,
which is which was, and I'll talk about this in the state of state too, that we go back and Why did we do the state business tax? Because we inadvertently amended the Constitution to make it questionable whether you can tax some businesses the same as other businesses. Basically, corporations can have a corporate income tax. Limited liability partnerships cannot. Many people have converted to limited liability partnerships. So we go to a modified gross receipts tax to meet that requirement. I believe we ought to go back and ask the people if for permission to just tax all businesses the same way. That would be one way to fix the business tax. But the business tax that we changed for one reason, to lower school property taxes. We cut school property taxes by $14 billion. We were going to pay for that with state surpluses and an increased state business tax. The state business tax was supposed to pay for about half of that. The other half was going to come out of other funds, basically state surpluses.
Okay, I got to stop you now because I got 30 seconds left.
We don't have the surpluses,
okay.
And the tax isn't working, so we need to address it.
Okay, 30 seconds, Welborn. Is there going to be something, some sort of state relief that's going to happen for Welborn? We've got about 25 seconds.
Well, I would not want to predict that right now. We'll have to wait and see. This is a local issue. It should be solved locally. The effort to go to the state to pass a bill to specifically address the issues in College Station versus Welborn, I think, is a practical impossibility. And so whether we change all of state law to address this local issue or not, I think is a long shot.
Thanks for the time. WTAW College Station, Brian, that's State Senator Steve Ogden joining us. We'll talk with him more during the session.